Hello, 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 Dr. Shirley Davis, the success doctor. I am so excited to have you as our guest on our podcast, The Inclusion Solution Live. And we are live today. And again, it is just such an honor to have you. We have known each other for, I don't know how many years, at least 20, right?
At least 20 years. Yeah, 2004. Wow.
Oh, so it is 20 years.
Yes, it is. When I first started at the utility company and you were there, we got a chance to be divinely connected, and we've been connected to this work and to each other for ever since then, for 20 years.
Since that time. And it has just been such a blessing to have you in my life, both personally and professionally.
Yes,
I know how extremely busy that you are, and you have a very, very successful business, and you are acclaimed. And I am grateful. I am grateful that you would take this time to be in conversation with me today about justice for all. So let me tell our audience about you. Many people who are listening and watching probably already know about you, but I'm going to tell them about Dr. Shirley Davis. You are an accomplished corporate executive, global workforce management expert, a certified leadership coach, and a master of reinvention. You bring a lot of high energy, and I know that firsthand. High content and high value message to audiences all around the world, and literally all around the world. When you were here with me in January, we were together and you were telling me all of the countries that you had worked in and visited. I said, I didn't even know that. So you have truly been around the world with your expertise, just mesmerizing audiences. You have over 30 years of business experience in a variety of executive positions, roles with Fortune 500 companies, and you've served as Vice President of Global Diversity and Inclusion and Workforce Strategies for SHRM, the largest HR membership organization in the world. You are now President of SDS Global Enterprises. And how long have you been doing that?
Gosh, since I left SHRM about 8-9 years ago.
Oh, wow, wow. And what you have done in that 8-9 years, my goodness. You are a full service consulting firm and specializing in providing solutions and strategies for achieving leadership excellence and building high performing and inclusive cultures where all talent can thrive. You have been on television, NBC's Today Show. You've been in the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, CBS News, HR Magazine, Profiles and Diversity Journal, and it goes on and on and
on. Thank you.
And you have also written several best-selling books, including Reinvent Yourself, Strategies for Achieving Success in Every Area of Your Life, The Seat, How to Get Invited to the Table When You Are Overperforming and Undervalued, and Living Beyond What If. And your newest titles, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Dummies.
Yeah.
And you have one another book coming out in May called Inclusive Leadership for Dummies, and that will be published in May.
Yeah.
So wow. We are just so fortunate to have you in this work, to have you in this field, because I know that you absolutely have transformed so many people.
Thank you.
That is a little bit about Dr. Shirley Davis. I probably have left some things out. There's probably more, but you can fill us in as we continue to talk.
Sure.
So just tell us a little bit more about you. I read the, you know, the formal bio, but tell us a little bit more about you, who you are, where you grew up. I've had the opportunity to meet your parents and the influence that they have had on you and your daughter. So just tell us about Dr. Shirley Davis, the success doctor.
Yeah. So, you know what, in addition to that, I am the oldest of four children. I am the only girl. I am a daddy's girl. A mom's my best friend as well. I am a mom of one of the most beautiful, talented, and ambitious, driven, passionate daughters who now officially works for me in the company as of 2 years ago. And you know a little bit about that because we both have our daughters working with us. And it's so amazing to build that level of partnership and camaraderie. But I also grew up in the North Carolina area. And then my parents moved to Washington, D.C. when I was about 6-7 years old. And I lived there for about 35 years of my life. moved to Oklahoma, went to my grad school program there, moved to Richmond for a job transfer, moved to Baltimore, Maryland, a transfer, and then ultimately landed in Tampa Bay, which is where I am now because I am a, I'm telling you what, I love, love, love the water, and I know you do too. I'm right by the Gulf of Mexico, and it's just my happy place. I love the warm weather year round, less, you know, traffic and congestion, better cost of living, and certainly a better quality of life. And just a few other things, I am an HGTV junkie, beach bum, and I'm a movie buff, and I'm very, very close to my family, and I enjoy just doing those kinds of things that mean a lot, creating memories and creating moments.
So what are some of your favorite movies?
Well, actually, I have been watching a lot more of the Netflix. Now, I just watched this past weekend with my mom and with my daughter because she insisted that we watch it when with all of us together. I watched Shirley Chisholm, the wonderful, wonderful movie and documentary. I thought that was an amazing movie that was done. I love seeing those kinds of documentaries. I love the one that Tyler Perry did on his life. That was wonderful. I just love learning about some of our history, but also I love drama and I love crime mysteries. And I'm a big, big CSI and criminal law kind of person as well, too. So those are the kinds of things I watch.
Okay, great. I've heard Shirley Chisholm Netflix movie is very, very good. I haven't seen it yet. Maybe I'll watch that this weekend. Yeah.
Regina King was amazing. Amazing. She needs an award for it. Yeah.
So how did you come to this work and what inspired you to the work that you do?
You know, it wasn't necessarily what I grew up saying. One day I want to be in human resources, or I want to be a chief diversity officer, or I want to be running my own global consulting firm in leadership and culture transformation. But the work found me. It was my purpose. And I feel like it was a divine assignment that I had to accept. And I believe that, you know, throughout our lives, we go through a series of events and situations and circumstances that ultimately guide us to what we were created to do. And I remember my second job right out of college gave me the opportunity to take on a role as the trainer for cultural sensitivity. That's what it used to be called back in those days. But you know, in college, I was working in banking, and I worked in banking for about 17 years. But right. in the bank, I was a teller supervisor, assistant branch manager. But one day, though, my supervisor asked me if I would take on cultural sensitivity training. And, you know, that made sense because they assumed I knew everything because I was the only one that looked like me, right? And the work was about getting more people that look like me to be a part of, you know, deposit accounts. And we needed to reach out to our communities. And this was right after the Community Reinvestment Act was passed. And so I didn't know much about diversity or cultural sensitivity and that kind of thing, but I did understand the impetus behind the work. And so I took it on as an assignment, learned a lot, bought in some experts. I remember my very first consultant that I bought in was Dr. Samuel Betances.
He's one of the
pioneers. Yeah. And he came in, did some training, and he helped me, coach me, and helped provide the resources and materials. And then I started taking classes, and I really liked it. So when another opportunity came to be an HR generalist, I took that role on and bought the diversity piece on with me as well. And through a series of, you know, the last 25 years, I have worked in every area of HR, but I always had that lens of trying to ensure that everyone had equal opportunities, but also that there was, you know, not only justice, but more so that there was equity in the ways that we were paid, the ways that we were promoted, and how we were leveraged and developed in the organization. Because I had experienced being, you know, that group of people that were overlooked and undervalued.
Okay, wow, great. I'm learning, I learn something new about you all the time. That's really great. So you recently were featured in Oprah Daily. And you talked about that, in that you talked about how your daughter inspired your DEI work. So tell us a little bit more about that.
You know, it was a wonderful Mother's Day about 2020-21. And they were doing a Mother's Day piece, and they really wanted us to talk a bit about that journey. And so the name of the article was called The Birth of My Why. And it wasn't just the story I just told you of understanding that life had brought me to this position. I accepted it and then ultimately realized that this was a calling. This was something I really wanted to do. That was the birth of my first why. But during that time, I also had the birth of my other more significant why, and that was the birth of my daughter, Tori. And she gave me such meaning, but at the same time, I realized that if she was going to come along into the workplace, that I wanted her not to have to deal with some of the things that I had to deal with, names that I was called and times where I was the only one and certainly felt invisible, didn't get opportunities that I know I had worked hard to. And I wanted to avoid her experiencing those same things. And so that work began for that reason. So she became my more significant why. But guess what? As she was going through her first grade, she was called the N-word in first grade. Mm-hmm. And then throughout her years, she's also been in very integrated schools, very diverse schools, but still had those experiences where she was either left out or looked over or called names or, you know, just bullied for no reason other than just being the only one. Ultimately, you know, she went off to college and then got into the workforce. And it was interestingly enough, Mary Frances, she found out why my work was so important when she got into the workplace and started experiencing some of the same things. So now she really began to embrace this and learn how important this work was. And she's really embraced it for herself as a part of the work that she does with me as a millennial. So she's got a whole different voice. She's got a whole different audience that she can speak to about the experiences. And yet she's got different solutions and strategies that she provides as well.
Yeah, she provides a different generational lens. Right. Yeah. I find that that's really helpful with Marisha and me as well, that she can really ground me sometimes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That is just so wonderful.
Yeah.
So you are dubbed as a success doctor. And so how does that manifest in your work? Inspire us and motivate us with some of your messages around success and reimagination, all of that.
I am actually, that name came to me a number of years ago, probably 15 or 20 years. I didn't embrace it at first, but what I found was I kept being very attracted to helping other people become better. As I had become better and as I had gone through so many things in my life, I became, I got a recognition that it wasn't just about me going through these things and not just about me overcoming them, but it was about me being able to do that in a way that I could help others so that it either would help them avoid that or minimize the impact. But more importantly, that I could help them with the strategies to really be successful. And certainly not only with my daughter, but so many people I began to mentor. I became a storyteller because so many things that happened in my life, from near-death experiences, I've been through a bank robbery, I've been in a coma from a car accident, I have, been through relationship failures, I've been through bankruptcy, I've been through career setbacks, just so many things that I've learned, overcome, and then became a master of my own reinvention. And when I did that, I was like, you know what, I need to tell these stories because so many other people are dealing with the same things. And it's like my path kept crossing those that needed it. So I wrote that first book, Reinvent Yourself, because I told stories of how I had come through those tragedies and adversities, but how I became, an overcomer through those, and it made me better. And I saw how much it helped other people. People started then saying, my God, you're not only a doctor, you're a PhD, but you're the success doctor. So I began to embrace that. And actually, that was one of my very first businesses, was the Success Doctor LLC. So I still embrace it.
Would you be willing to share with the listeners one of those stories that you, about how you overcame just one situation?
Yes. Let me tell you about one that really would resonate with us in the workplace. And that was, I was working at Circuit City back in the day when they still existed, even before Best Buy put them out of business. And I was working at the headquarters in HR, and I actually had one of the EVPs reach out to me and ask me to take on a special project and move into a new role. I was in the training and development role. I absolutely loved it, but they had seen my work, had heard of me being a high performer, and asked me to do it. I was very, very complimented about it. And I was like, wow, this is very honorable. And for no reason, I didn't post for the position or anything like that. he said to me, he said, well, you know what? We don't have this position posted, but just go ahead and write out your own job description and we'll go with that. All right, that was nice, but a little uncomfortable. And then I had people starting to ask me, why did she get that job? Or how did she get that job? What did she do, you know, to get that job, with an implication that perhaps I had slept my way through the top or somehow I had brown-nosed my way. That wasn't the case at all. And for the first 6 months, it was very uncomfortable. I did not like it. It wasn't work that I enjoyed doing. It was special projects, but more so it was just kind of being in the office and being like this visible Black woman. And after 6 months, when I realized that this wasn't something I wanted to do, the sad part about it was I left the job I loved in another department and division to come work for him. And I wasn't happy, but I knew I couldn't quit. I knew that I couldn't leave that job and go in another place in the company because I would be blackballed. Right. So I ultimately found another job making $25,000 more a year.
I moved, went
to go work for Capital One. Capital One was just spinning off from Signet Bank. And I had worked in banking all those years. And so I thought, well, I can do this. I went and applied for the position, got the position, and was making more money. And when I went into his office to tell him that I was going to be leaving and moving on, leaving the company, he was livid. And he said, you are so ungrateful. He said, I gave you an opportunity and you're just not even appreciative. He said, I will never do this again. He said, you have messed it up for every other Black person coming behind you. And I don't need your 2-week resignation. Today is your last day. And, you know, I always tell the story and I say, look, I did what everybody else would have did. I left that office. I did not let him see me cry. But when I left that office, I did what y'all would do. I called my mama and told her what had just happened. Ultimately, my mom talked me off of that cliff. She told me to dry up my tears, shake the dust off my feet. She said, girl, you making $25,000 more. You ain't got to deal with this, you know, blankety blank. And she said, I raised you to be better. You are smart. You is kind and you is important. And so I went on and, you know, left that behind, but was very, very hurt. By going through that experience and wondered, had a little bit of guilt, did I really mess it up for everybody else? But I later found out I was pretty much a token and that the company had quietly settled a multi-million-dollar class action discrimination lawsuit, and that they were picking people, cherry picking people, tokens to put them in positions because they were under consent decree. But I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I've had that token experience, yeah. You know, as well, many, many years ago. And at the time, you don't know that you're actually the token.
Right.
You think,
I know.
You've been chosen for your capability and, yeah. You know, for your, and that is probably true as well. However, I remember being on a board where they were going to have a board photo. And I was the only person of color on the board and I couldn't make it that day. So they changed the day of the photo.
Those photos.
I wanted to make sure I was in the photo.
Yep, me too. And I've learned to, you know, so that's one experience where I've had to reinvent myself because it was so damaging.
Right.
You know, and some of those other experiences of being thrown under the bus, somebody taking all your ideas and taking all the credit and then giving you the blame and people getting promoted over you who you know that you trained them and then they became your boss and being out with teams that I'm managing and people are looking at me as I'm the executive assistant because the rest of my team didn't look like me. They were white males and they assumed that the white males had to be the boss. So it's so many of those kinds of experiences that I had to reinvent myself and I had to get a seat at the table. That's why those books that you called off in the introduction, that's where those books come from. They come from stories, real life lived experiences that have shaped and formed how I see the world and why this work is still so important.
And you have helped so many people to, you know, reimagine, to reinvent themselves and to move forward with resolve and with confidence that I too, you know, can do this. So give us one recommendation for how you get the seat at the table.
Well, first of all, I'm big on know who you are, know your own power and have your own sense of self-worth, because some of those experiences, Mary Frances, really did take a lot from me. And I oftentimes, you know, I walked away feeling less than, feeling devalued. And so the first thing I had to do was get out of my own head, and step into my own greatness, right? So that's a big one, is get out of your own way. Stop being your biggest critic and become your biggest advocate and your biggest cheerleader, and recognize that you can't say all these negative things about you, because you were born and created for greatness, and you have so much value and so many gifts on the inside of you that when people don't appreciate that, then as my mama said, shake the dust off your feet and move on to the next one, because there are some open opportunities and doors that are divinely separated just for you. Walk ye in it and walk with your own personal power.
And if you can't get the seat at a table, for example, in a big corporation, you know, you have a seat at the table as the CEO of your own corporation.
That's right. And this one I'm sitting in, it was a wonderful Christmas gift from my team. They gave me a new seat at my own desk, in my own office, right? In my own global corporation. And I love that. So there have been times, not only just starting your own businesses, but when they don't give you a seat at the table in your organization, I found people who saw my value, and I found people who saw my worth, and they begin to speak on my behalf. They begin to open up doors and open up seats at the table as well, that even when I wasn't invited by others, I had someone in that room who did invite me. Or there were times where I invited myself and said, hey, that's a meeting I really believe I need to be in. I've got some real great insights or experiences or expertise, you know, would you mind? And so many times I've not been told no, I've been told yes. And they were like, wow, she did have something to say. And it's like, you know, I'm not invisible, but I know sometimes people feel that way.
So the theme of our conference, the theme of our summit is justice for all. So what does that mean to you? When you hear that phrase, justice for all, what does that mean?
Well, a couple of things, but it means to me that no one person and no one group of people are superior to anyone else. As I just said, we all bring unique values. We bring experiences. We all have something to offer. And I believe that we were all created equal, regardless of whether or not people would see that or agree with that. We were actually created equal. And I believe that that means that we should be able to access opportunities, that we should be able to participate in the workplace with, and we should be treated with dignity and respect. And, you know, we should not be judged based on the group that we're from, our identity, our color, our race, our age, our gender, anything else like that. But we really should be seen as a human and seen as a unique individual that brings, you know, great gifts and talents, and that can help any organization achieve its objectives.
So what are two or three actions that we need to take to truly achieve what you have just said in terms of what justice?
You know, a couple of things. I think it's so important for us, first of all, to recognize that we all are created equal, and we should be treated that way. I don't think too, you know, as we look at what's going on, even in our current climate and our political rhetoric and the fact that we're so polarized, I think we do have to first acknowledge that, you know, we do have a history. And I think that we have to face the reality of that, but also face the realities of today and look at the possibilities of tomorrow and to look at how we can become better. I think, yes, there needs to be greater legislation, and there needs to be more advocacy around laws that prohibit us from some of the things I just shared with you that I experienced in the workplaces, but also not to demonize, not to ban, not to dismantle and undermine this important work of creating opportunities for everybody, and even I would say perpetuating a culture of inclusion and belonging where everybody is treated with that level of dignity and respect. And I would say that third or fourth thing is, we need more leaders that have courage and boldness and are willing to lean in. They're willing to speak up and step up about how important this work is, the impact that it has had in the organization, and the going out of business strategy that it is when you try to dismantle it.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. I truly concur so much about the need for people who are currently in power and who have a voice that reaches far and wide to speak up and to insist that we continue this work. Because right now, the naysayers' voices seem to be louder. But of course, negative news always gets more press.
That's true. There's really some, I want to tell you, I am impressed with the number of forward-thinking CEOs who are speaking out about it, who have said this is important for us that we're going to do this. I mean, I'm looking even at the Jamie Dimon. He's putting it out there. He's like, look, this is important. I'm loving to hear even, you know, the Scent Marshalls and looking at how they're really pushing this ahead. And I've got a number of clients that we're working with Fortune 50 CEOs who are saying, this work is still important. We still need to do it. Right. We need your partnership and we're going to forge on ahead. And one of those too, I love it with Disney. I'm on the board of Make-A-Wish Foundation and the chair of the board is on, is a part of Disney and he is pushing forward and said, this is important to us. Right. So there's many, many more, but those are some of those firsthand accounts of what I've seen. And I just think there needs to be so many more.
Right. And speaking, and I think here's what I'm thinking too, is that even though we hear all of this anti-DEI stuff, perhaps a little bit more quietly, there's a whole lot of pro DEI stuff going on. You mentioned Disney; they're one of our clients. We're continuing to work with them. Yes, absolutely. So, you have written a book. Well, one of the books that you wrote is called "Living Beyond What If," and that is going to be the title and what you're going to talk about at the summit. Right. So give us a little bit of a, don't give it all to us now because it's going to be so amazing, but give us a little bit. It was a little hint about what that's going to be.
Yeah, Living Beyond What If. That was my fifth book and it was published in 2022. And it was so timely and so relevant and so necessary because we're at a crossroads in our society. You know, there's a lot of change and shifts going on. There's a lot of disruption happening. And you know what? It really caused many people to shrink. It caused a lot of people to second guess who they were and to rethink and reposition. And, you know, the word of 2020 was to pivot and to really think about, is this the life that I really want to live? Am I living my best life? Am I living the dreams and the great purpose that I was called to? And one of the things I'll tell you is I wrote the book and I dedicated it to the 90%. The 90% of people that when I ask all over the world, and I've been asking it for the last 15 years, how many of you by show of hands are living your best life? How many of you by show of hands understand and know what your purpose is? And how many of you would say, if I had to live my life all over again, I would do it differently? Well, there's so many people that raise their hand. 90% of people don't know their purpose. 90% of people are not living their best life. And they are not fulfilled. And so the book is all about how do we get beyond some of the what ifs that keep us from living those dreams and imagining the possibilities of being your best self and giving all that you can, all that you were created to do. So many people are just going along to get along and they're lacking that significance and meaning in life. And that's what the book is about.
Wow. And that is what your presentation is going to be about, right? You're going to inspire people and motivate people because, you know, surely right at this particular time, so many people are feeling down. They're feeling
stuck.
They're feeling exhausted. You know, they're feeling because in the world, we have been through a lot over the past 4 or 5 years and we continue to go, you know, to go through a lot. It just seems like tragedy after tragedy, you know, wars and, you know, Hamas and Palestine and Haiti and, you know, and there's just so much and people have, you know, people who they care about, relatives and people that they care about. And then we have the situation in the workplace with reproductive health, health rights being, you know, being challenged. And so
voting rights. I mean, so it's so much. Right. And, you know, people are exhausted with so much of the hate speak that's happening and so much of the political upheaval that's happening. And, you know, we're just fatigued. And, you know, we're fatigued in our own work because we know that we've been doing this for so long and there's some setbacks. And yet we know that there's some quantum leaps and then you have some more setbacks. Right. So a lot of people really are in a space where they want to renew. They want renewed inspiration. They want to transform their lives. They really want more significance and meaning. And so many people, when we went through the Great Resignation a couple of years ago, it was because people were working in jobs and doing work that they really didn't find meaningful and significant. And it was just a go to work every day and come back home. But there's a real void of significance. And so I want to help people transform their minds, their thinking, their behaviors. And so when you do that, then you can create the kind of life where I call it your happy place. And you can begin to move towards fulfilling your dreams and living your destiny. That's what we should be doing.
Oh, wow. You are just so amazingly powerful and motivational. And every time I hear you speak, it just gives me more resolve to say, you know, even after 40 years, you know.
It is never too late. That's right.
So I do want you to be able to give a plug for your book that's coming out in May.
Yeah.
And so talk a little bit about that.
Inclusive leadership. Yeah, I'm excited about that. You know, that one is sort of a compliment and a follow-up to the first one that I did in 2022, and that was Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Dummies. And I always want to make sure people understand when we're in this work and we use the word for dummies, it's clearly not a slight on anyone to call anyone, you know, a handicap in any way or disability in any way. It literally is. In the 30 years that the Wiley and Company has published Dummies books, it's really about those of us who are willing to self-admit things that we don't know, things that we need to learn, and knowledge and skills that we need to build. And that's what this is about. We need more inclusive leaders. There is a tremendous leadership gap in our society, and we've got to close it. And part of that is understanding the demographic shifts that we're experiencing. The new and the next generation is demanding a new type of leader. They're demanding to work in companies that see them, that value them, that respect them, that want them to share their ideas. They want to be heard, they want to be valued, and they want to feel safe in the workplace. And only inclusive leaders can do that. So in this book, I'm going to be revealing and I'm just going to be unpacking in 22 chapters all of the things, the skills, the competencies, the best practices, the tips, tools, and techniques that we all need as leaders, leaders from every level in every seat, whether you're a people leader or an individual contributor, we all have a responsibility to lead more inclusively.
Wow. Wow. I don't know where you find the time to do all that you do. And then all of the keynotes that you are giving around the world. I see you on Facebook. And yeah. in your bio, we didn't highlight that. Was that in 2022 that you were honored with the highest award from Toastmasters?
Yeah, I was. That came out of, I didn't even see that coming. And it was something that, you know, was a real, for me, a high recognition, but it was an honor and I was so humbled. But they recognize only one person in the world.
In the world.
Right. Organization. And they recognize someone who's doing some tremendous work and having tremendous impact in organizations and in our society around leadership and communication, because they're a communications organization. And yes, so I was able to keynote there and at the same time, received the Golden Gavel Award, which is such an honor.
Right. Well, so, and you are so deserving. You are so deserving.
Thank you. Thank
so,
you.
Dr. Shirley Davis, it has been a pleasure to be with you, to be in conversation with you today, to be in community with you today. It continues to be an honor to be your friend and to be your colleague. And so thank you again for doing
this work, right? Because we still got more to do. So you can't retire yet. I just say, you know, we got to stay here and keep this work going because they need us.
They need us. Okay. All right. Well, I'm not going to retire yet, but I am probably going to just,
step back
a little bit.
We're building the next generation of practitioners, right?
Exactly.
So that's what we got to do. We're in our season now. Give back and build legacy and transfer that to the next generation.
And that's what we hope to in part do with our summit, Racial Justice at Work, Justice for All. And we use racial justice at work, and that turns some people off because it's not just about race. But that's I'm unapologetically focusing on race because I believe if we can, quote, fix the race issue, so many other of the issues will be better and be resolved. But you notice that our tagline is justice for all. Yes. So at the summit, we're going to hear from people who are from the LGBTQ community, people from the disability community. We have a session with Jennifer Brown on allyship, Black women and white women. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to focus on, on gender. We're looking at all different aspects of diversity. And there's a big aspect of our conference that's going to be talking about wellness and how we maintain our own well-being. So it's going to be amazing, and we're so happy that you are a part of it.
I am honored too. Looking forward to learning and gleaning from the others, and certainly to contributing just some inspiration and empowerment on that same thing. Because I'm going to be talking about the wellness piece, because we have got to be well mentally, emotionally, psychologically, so that we can do this work, right? We have to, you know, you and I help each other a lot. Just when we're feeling weak and fatigued, we got to pick each other up and push each other, right? Say, keep moving forward. You got it. You go, girl. So that's what we need. We need that, right? Wellness piece too. So thank you for hosting this important, important conversation.
Thank you. Well, until next time, yay, let us keep working towards justice for all. And again, I thank you, Dr. Davis.
Thank you. My pleasure.